This is Ryan Archidak, and I'll shout out to the Bulls HQ podcast, all the way from Australia. We represent, and thanks for all the support.
Fans, welcome to Bulls HQ, a Chicago Bulls podcast on the Blue Wire Podcast Network. Thank you for joining us on this episode of the show. Since the last time we spoke, the Bulls scored two solid wins, albeit against injury-depleted Pacers and Raptors squads. But at this stage of the season, like, who really cares? Wins are all that matter. And unfortunately, losses matter too, which is why losing a winnable game to the Atlanta Hawks on Friday night, one which Zach LaVine dropped a 50-piece, like, that really hurts. That really hurts seeing that happen. So it even hurts more when you see teams that are currently in the 7th, 8th, and 9th spots in the East all have wins last night as well. So it wasn't an ideal game, and I'd rather be talking about a 4-game winning streak right now heading into next week. But nonetheless, let's talk some Bulls anyway. And here with me today is a first-time guest. Honestly, it's kind of absurd that I've waited this long to get this man on, but thankfully we've sorted this out now. And let's welcome in the co-host of the Locked On Bulls podcast, as well as the Bulls Outcast podcast. And maybe more importantly, I'll say this, probably someone who I deem at least to be the biggest Joakim Noah and Dennis Rodman fan that I know. He is Matt Peck, and he joins me now. Matt, how are you, sir?
Mark, I'm doing well, man. I hope you're doing well, too. It's great to be chat with you. As always, I enjoy our chats. And yeah, man, that's crazy. Because I know that, like, we've had you on Locked On before, and, like, you know, we interact on Twitter all the time. But I am humbly excited to be chatting on your pod this time, man. And let me tell you, I caught your appearance recently on my guy Big Dave's Bow Law Bulls, and that was a very, very fun listen.
Yeah, I mean, anytime you can catch up with Dave and C-Dub is that, like, it's fun if you're the guest, let's say, or even the listener. But, you know, those guys are super easy to talk to, and yeah, I'll definitely have them on at some stage. But yeah, it's definitely my fault that I haven't had you on here, mate. Like you said, I've been on Locked On Bulls a couple times, but I'm just really bad at planning. Like, even yesterday when I hit you up, I was just, like, randomly out of the blue. I was like, I'll just DM Matt now and see if he's free. But, like, I should really be planning this in advance. So we've tried to do this before, but I've always just been terrible at scheduling these sorts of things. So dude, it's definitely my fault.
Mark, you know what I just remembered? We had a plan for me to come on your podcast last January, and it was the Sunday that Kobe Bryant died. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Like, we had been DMing the past couple of days, and we were, okay, Sunday at this time, and we had it, like, earmarked. We were like, great, let's do it, can't wait. And then woke up to that news and was like, holy crap. And I remember you DM'd me and were like, should we push this back? It just feels like a weird day to, like, talk about a really shitty Bulls team. And I was like, yeah, man, I feel you. Yeah, that's so crazy.
I totally had forgotten about that. Like, that day was a bit crazy and weird for us, obviously, basketball fans. And now that you say that, like, my memory in general is terrible, but now that you say that, I'm like, oh yeah, that was something that we had planned and was scheduled and ready to go. And when I woke up that morning, my time was like, oh shit, like, there's no way we can do this podcast. So yeah, that's, I guess, that just adds to the context there. That's probably why we haven't been able to do this, because
so this chat is a year plus in the making.
and
all of
crazy.
The crazy shit that has happened in the world and with the Bulls in that year is unbelievable.
Where do we even start, I guess, would be the point. Not that we're going back to review that 12 to 15 month period, but when you put it in that context, it is it's crazy. But look, I want to fast forward, obviously, to the current day Bulls. Like I said from the top, I wanted to talk about this loss to the Hawks, because I mean, yeah, I want to get your opinion on it. I haven't spoken Bulls with you extensively in a conversation in this format, let's say, for a while, but to me, like, that loss was probably more representative of where the Bulls at versus those wins against the Pacers and the Raptors. Like, those, like I mentioned, those two teams were missing very important players. The Bulls should have won those games. They did, which was good. But then they lost a very winnable game to the Hawks. And I don't know if the Hawks are that much better than the Bulls. If, you know, from a record standpoint, they are. But they're, from a record point of view, from a competitive standpoint, like the Hawks are roughly a 500 team, let's say. The Bulls should be competing with those teams and at least, you know, getting wins against those teams occasionally, yeah. Which seemingly doesn't happen for whatever reason. And yeah, even that Hawks team weren't full strength, and somehow the Bulls found a way to drop that game. So I'm still trying to get it through my mind exactly how it happened. I mean, I go back and forth on it all, especially when someone goes off for a 50-point game, like LaVine did. It's like, how do you lose that game? But yeah, what were your thoughts at least watching that game? Maybe the first half, then into the second half. Like, how are you feeling about the whole thing and how it transpired?
Yeah, man. I mean, I was just so torn. As I was sitting there after the game, trying to wrap my head around it, you know, chatting with Big Dave and our you know, viewers on Hot Mic, I was just like, the first half was one of the most fun hours in my Bulls fan life that I could remember in a long time. Mm-hmm. I mean, watching Zach drop 39 and a half, including 25 straight points in the second quarter. I mean, not just as Bulls fans, as NBA fans, you don't see that stuff all that often. Like, those performances are rare, and they only come from the most special players in this league. And so I was just enjoying every second of it. Every time he pulled up about halfway through that run, I knew it was going in, and it was crazy, and it was so fun to watch. And then the second half happened. The Hawks make their defensive adjustments. He's getting double teamed. He was even getting triple teamed sometimes. And the Bulls, like, I mean, there's a lot of layers to this. Clearly, you can't blame Zach for that loss, which I saw some Bulls fans doing on Twitter immediately after. And I was like, dude dropped 50. And other than his new, you know, partner in crime, Vooch, who had another 20-10 game, the role players did nothing. And, like, you know, if you were Zach trying to pass out of these double teams, and I question who Donovan had on the floor late in that game as it slipped away, but nobody else could do a darn thing. And it was really, really frustrating to see that performance from Zach ruined with a loss in a game that, as you said, and I agree, they should have won.
Yeah, for sure. And, like, I felt myself being a bit of a curmudgeon in that first half because, like, on one hand, I completely agree with you. Like, Zach going absolutely mental was just insane to watch. I mean, we referenced Kobe before, but I think there was a stat going around that in terms of NBA players in the last 20-odd years, let's say, who have dropped however many points in a half, I think Zach was third all-time in that 20-year span with 39 points. Klay Thompson had a 40-piece, and then Kobe Bryant, I think, had 42 points in 2003. Something crazy like that. So we were witnessing just some insane, almost historic level scoring from Zach in that first half. But at the same time, like, there was just ominous signs in the background where I was sort of watching and I was thinking, this could go a number of ways. And I was sort of tweeting it out, and I felt like I was being an idiot because I wasn't focusing on Zach going nuts, which is probably what I should have been, you know, I should have had most of my attention right. to. But
as a Bulls fan, you've been ingrained in your mind to be talking and worrying about when's the other shoe going to drop, right?
Yeah, 100%. And that other shoe was the pick and roll defense, which to me was the story of this game, and the fact that they just got completely owned by Trae Young in the pick and roll. Like, Zach was the best player on the court last night, but you can make an argument that Trae Young was equally as damaging, maybe even more so, just due to the fact how bad the Bulls' pick and roll's defense was. And that was very clear in the first half against the Hawks, but Zach was just doing amazing things that had just carried the Bulls to a plus 13 lead at the half. But as you sort of mentioned, once the Hawks sort of started trapping and trying to get the ball out of Zach LaVine's hand, which is, you know, that's two games in a row that's happened now. Like, the Raptors were playing a box and one against Zach. He was awesome in that game. He had 13 assists, was moving the ball. But like we talked about before, like, that Raptors team, they kind of suck right now, whereas the Hawks, right, they have some pieces. So when the Hawks amplified that defense, and then it was basically just Vucevic and the role players to do something, the Bulls couldn't get it done, which was, I guess that's why this loss really hurts me, because it just magnified some of the issues that we do have on this squad. And the fact that the Bulls weren't able to get through that other guard or another playmaker at the trade deadline, like, this game really exposed that. So right. I don't know. For me, watching this game, like, the pick and roll defense was an issue, but I was also concerned with the fact that the Bulls, whilst I love their playmaking from Thad and Vooch from the high post, like, it really did expose the need to have another perimeter playmaker at that point in time when teams do send doubles or triples to Zach.
Yeah, I think you just highlighted the two most major still existing issues for this roster as far as through the rest of this season, maybe, you know, a playoff appearance, and then into the offseason and the next decisions that, that AK and Eversley have to make, is that this team's defense, especially when they are getting picked apart in the pick and roll, you know, you mentioned Vooch, you know, getting switched on to Trey Young, like, you know, good luck with that. You know, we could talk about Zach's 50. Trey Young casually dropped 42 and nobody was really talking about it.
Yeah, exactly.
And then also Lauri Markkanen, you know, just getting absolutely bullied in these switches where he's guarding guys he can't guard. The Bulls perimeter defense, we all always knew looking at this roster that it was going to be a struggle, that it was going to be a challenge. Obviously, Garrett Temple's absence has not helped. I thought his defense, when he was healthy earlier this season, you know, he never does anything flashy in the box score on any given night, and he actually was kind of going through a shooting slump as well, but the defense with Temple was always there, and it helped cover up a lot of weaknesses. And then on the other end, the lack of a competent point guard, the lack of another ball handler and playmaker around the perimeter, because, you know, Vooch's arrival certainly took some of the scoring pressure off of Zach, and he is a very capable passing big man like Thad Young. And so they've kind of, you know, with, you know, some spit and duct tape, glued things together a little bit to make them a better playmaking team, because you're seeing all these games where the Bulls are racking up somewhere between 25, 30, even 30 plus assists without a true point guard. No offense to Sato and Kobe. And I think you and I are on the same page most recently that it makes sense that Sato's starting and not Kobe.
Yeah.
And I was arguing with Big Dave after the game last night, because he was fine with Kobe being in there late, because he was like, hey, at least Kobe was the only other person outside of Zach and Vooch who could score. Like, he had 11. I was like, yeah, on 4 of 11 shooting. And he was like, well, Sato didn't hit a shot all night. I was like, so? If Sato's out there making the right reads and the good passes, he can get your team buckets that way. So I'm curious, what did you think about the fact that Kobe, who also, by the way, was getting cooked on the defensive end all night, was in there late in that game?
Yeah, I definitely want to talk about Donovan's lineups and rotations, because, look, it's something that I've been banging on about for a number of weeks now, maybe even a month or so, and I'm just cognizant of the fact that I just keep going to this well, and at least on Twitter, I keep banging on about it. I was meant to talk up to, I did a pod last week with C-Red Fred and Doug, and I had that on the rundown. We didn't get to it because we were too busy arguing about other things, but this has been a problem for the last few weeks, that Donovan's rotations have been funky and weird, and I get it. Like, this team has been overhauled. Like, he's essentially got a new team at this point, so I get why he's just trying things that maybe I don't know. To me, they don't make sense. They're not going to work. But for whatever reason, as a coach, maybe he needs to just do it to see if he finds something randomly. But I don't know. Some of the things that he's doing to me just don't make any sense right now. And like, we are definitely in line. Like, Sato is the guy that should be starting. He couldn't score last night. 0 points, 0 from 6 from the field, but he did have 10 assists. So he was creating points for other people. Like, he created at least 20 points, maybe more, depending if there was some threes on his assists there at least. Whereas like Kobe, yeah, he had 11 points on 11 shots, but for a large chunk of that game, like, he had 0 points. Like, that, most of his points came on 4 successive buckets on, like, in a couple minute span. So he did what Kobe does, which is, like, he can be really cold for a while and then just all of a sudden randomly catch hot. But I think you hit the nail on the head. Like, his defense, I don't know why Bulls fans don't pick this up, or some do, but maybe some ignore it. But, like, sure, Kobe's going to give you 11 points like he did last night, but how many points is he giving up on the other end? And
right. If
we want to talk about pick and roll defense, this was an issue with Wendell. It was an issue with Daniel Gafford. It's proving to be an issue with Nikola Vucevic as well. But it's not really the center's fault in the pick and roll defense right now. I don't know what the center is meant to do to sort of help or improve this Bulls defense, just due to the fact that the point of attack defense is so bad in pick and roll. And if Bulls fans go back and watch this Hawks game and just go and watch Kobe White, like, sort of just get caught and die on those screens, and how easy it was for Trae Young to just get in the lane and throw lobs to Capella, or, you know, just get inside and do his own thing. So you know, Kobe had 11 points, but how many did he give up? So, right. Yeah, we are definitely aligned on that one.
Because people, you know, rag on Trae Young for that too. You know, Trae Young, yeah. Undersized guard, bad defensive guard, gets crushed, you know, dealing with screens. He can't fight through him. He can't fight over him. And he doesn't have the speed to get under him and get back to his guy. But he drops 30 or 40 points. So Kobe ain't doing that. I mean, we saw him do that for a stretch of games toward the end of his rookie season, and it was really fun. I feel like it was, you know, it was Tums for Bulls fans who had the worst gut rot watching all of the crap that went wrong and was just somewhere between bad and a joke last season. So seeing a rookie, you know, this 19-year-old, 20-year-old kid come in and have these games where he's lighting it up and he's hitting all these threes and he's getting to the rim, it was something for the fans to root for at the tail end of an awful season. And I feel like maybe that's why a lot of Bulls fans attached themselves to Kobe and then were like, all right, he's our starting point guard now. Let's see how it goes. And then a lot of Bulls fans, I think, were crushed when Donovan made the switch for Kobe and put him to the bench because they think it's like you're giving up on him too soon. And it's like not necessarily giving up. I say this to Bulls fans all the time. I'm not giving up on Kobe White as a useful piece for this team's roster for years to come. But maybe his best role is being a scorer off the bench and not a guy who you have to worry about in every capacity of, you know, he can't run the point. He can't play defense. That's not a guy you start, like plain and simple.
Yeah, for sure. And you may not be giving up on him, but I'm pretty damn close at this point. Like,
of his decision making is just really hard to watch, man.
Oh, it's tough. And sometimes I catch myself and I do feel bad, like pointing out some of just his terrible mistakes that he does make. He had a really bad one against the Jazz. I can't remember which game I pointed it out, but like there was a play where it may have been even the Hawks game. I can't remember exactly, but there was a sequence of possessions where on defense he didn't come over to help, and then the very next possession on offense he got caught in the air trying to make a drive against two Hawks defenders or whatever the team was, against two defenders. Oh, yeah. Got up in
I
the
remember.
Air.
I remember that exact play you're talking about where he left his feet and just like came down, threw the ball just basically out towards the baseline, and everybody was just like, Kobe, what are you doing, man? What was your plan there? And like that was one example, but I've noticed him doing that multiple times recently where he'll just leave his feet and not have a plan, and it ends up in a turnover.
Yeah, exactly. So like if you're an inefficient guard that is turnover pro and is low IQ, like that's just a recipe for me to immediately not really be into your game. Like that's just a player that I just don't like. But no matter how much of a heater you can get on, like, so I am biased in that sense, but whilst I can admit that like there is a role for Kobe somewhere in this NBA, like is it with the Bulls? Because to me, like there's just too much crossover with Zach, and like Donovan went to Kobe at the end of the game situation. Like one of those guys needs to play point guard, and a lot of the time it's going to be Kobe White, even if Zach does have the ball. So like I just don't see how those two can fit together. If for whatever reason Kobe can't necessarily improve his decision making and his defense, and to that point as well, like we can talk about Kobe closing the game, but like Lowry closing the game as well, like what the hell was going on there from a Donovan point of view as well? Like why are you closing the game with Lowry when you have a better version of Lowry and Nikola Vucevic? So you're not really capturing that that offensive upside of a Lowry Markkanen. And you're sort of doubling down on that whilst giving up so many more points on the defensive end. And again, I don't want to rag on Lowry because I think he's been put in a tough situation here, particularly when Billy plays him at small forward. But like, I'm sitting here watching Kobe and thinking this guy's not long for Chicago, but even more so for Lowry. Like this guy just doesn't make sense here anymore.
Right. You know, and at least with Kobe, they've got a little bit more time to figure it out. Like they're not even to the point of rookie contract extension talks yet. So if they want to keep him around for, you know, at least through the first part of next season as well to see if and where he fits, that's cool. Lowry, it's like, okay, you didn't trade him at the deadline. You know, maybe there were some various confirmations from reliable sources that his name was involved in the Bulls and Pelicans having conversations that also included Lonzo Ball. Nothing happened there. My guess is that the Pelicans' asking price for Lonzo is something that AK and Eversley thought was just too ridiculously high for a player that, if they're that interested, they can just go, you know, and pursue as a restricted free agent in a few months. As for Lowry, man, I think you know I have been one of his diehard believers on Bulls Twitter since his rookie year, and it's gotten harder and harder to defend him for his inconsistencies. I do feel some level of, you know, sympathy for him with what he dealt with last year and Jim's offense and the fact that he was just a ghost. Some of that's on Lowry, but I think you can also blame the coach and the offensive system a little bit too. He has never seemed to have any kind of chemistry with Zach, and it was supposed to be like, okay, can these be our two best players? Can they be our star duo? Zach turned himself into an all-star. And Lowry, like, I don't know why. And it's like Fred didn't do it enough, and Jim certainly didn't do it enough. And also, even before we got Vooch, I don't think Billy did it enough. The Zach and Lowry two-man game thing just, like, never happened. It never developed. It seems like something that none of the Bulls' past three coaches ever committed to trying to build as, like, a staple of the offense. And now you see Zach and Vooch playing in these two-man games, you know, with two lethal scores, picking and rolling, picking and popping, give and goes. And you're like, man, well, Vooch is an all-star, and Lowry is not. So maybe it's as simple as that. I don't know if Lowry fits at all into this team's long-term plans, because if he wants to be a starter and wants starter money, like you said, that does not add up anywhere in the equation of what it looks like AK and Eversley are planning to do with this team.
Yeah, for sure. And like a part of that reason why those two guys haven't been able to connect as a two-man game is just structurally, like, it's been difficult for the Bulls, because Lowry, in theory at least, is maybe the Bulls' best shooter, or at least the best catch-and-shoot shooter, let's say, particularly in the front court. So, like, it's important to have him spacing the floor for a guy like LaVine. And when you had, you know, previously, like, Wendell Carter or even Thad Young, like, rim rollers or guys that you want to use in the short role as a pick-and-roll option, like, it's kind of hard to then involve Lowry in that sense because you want him spacing the floor, whereas, you know, Vooch is a big guy, big screener, massive screener. The screens that that dude sets are legit, yeah. But he also is a fantastic shooter. So, like, you can get him involved because he can play. Like, Vooch is the perfect, at least offensively, like, he's everything that Lowry is. He's everything that Wendell was meant to be. He's everything that Thad has been in the short role. But he obviously can do so much more from a jump shooting point of view. So, he just gives you more flexibility and opportunity. So, to me, that makes sense. And, like, Lowry has never really made it as a center. He has not a big physical guy. Like, if Lowry could have played center and transferred over to center and set screens like a real center, then maybe that connection could have happened. But I don't know. Look, I just think this is who Lowry is, because, to be fair, like, we all got on Jim Boylan last season for using Lowry exclusively, not exclusively, but mostly as a jump shooter, let's say. Like, a good chunk of his offense, over half of his offense last season, was generated from the three-point line. Well, this season, like, it's even more from the three-point
right.
line than what it,
like,
was
up
under
until these few games where he's been coming off the bench and actually out of nowhere started to attack the basket. His percentage of shots behind the three-point line was, like, wasn't it like 75 or 80% or something like that?
I don't think it was that high, but it was like 60%. So, like, right. it's still markedly high, and it's at
percentage of baskets assisted. That was a really high number.
Yes, definitely. That's 80, 75, 80% for sure. So, I mean, he's always going to be a high assisted player, but I don't know, just the way he's being used now to me isn't that differently to what he was being used under Jim Boylan. And I this comes back to the whole honeymoon period of Billy Donovan and the fact that, you know, look, I've been critical of Donovan lately. He's been so much better than Jim Boylan. So let's make that very, very clear.
Right.
But that doesn't excuse the man from some criticism. And I think the criticism that we're sort of putting on him right now is fair. And I guess as an extension to this Donovan conversation, but also to Lowry too, I wanted to get your thoughts on Lowry at small forward, because to me at least, like, that's just something that makes my skin crawl type thing. Like, I just don't understand it at all, but maybe you have a different opinion. Maybe you can talk talk me into it. Like, what are your thoughts about Lariat small forward?
And it's, you know, they asked Nick Nurse about it after the game last night. A couple nights ago when they beat Toronto. And he was like, yeah, man, that's an interesting lineup. And he said, basically, I think it's just because Donovan wants to get all those guys' minutes because they're all talented. And he went on this, you know, 30-second rant about how great Lowry is. And look, Lowry played great in that Toronto game.
Yeah.
In these bench games in general, it's not just the three-point shooting, but you were seeing Lowry attack mismatches, something that he never seemed to do. Like, you know, our guy Big Dave always said, like, I hate that Lowry never remembers that he's 7 feet tall because he plays like he's 6'5". Like,
yeah.
We saw him attacking mismatches. We saw him hitting like a running, you know, like a Magic Johnson-esque running hook shot through the lane. We saw him backing guys down. We saw him actually scoring from the post. And we were like, oh, there's that guy that we thought could be a three-level scorer threat when we saw him as a rookie, and that all just disappeared. As far as these three-man lineups go, I'm with you. Mostly just because I can't stand watching it on the defensive end. Like, it's a disaster. It is such a disaster.
Yeah, for sure. And this is like when I start coming back and feeling bad for Lowry. Like, I don't feel bad for him if he's on offense, let's say, where he's not taking advantage of his size or he's not moving, he's not scoring the ball. Like, I don't feel bad in those situations. But when I see him on an island playing that small forward position and trying to stay with wings on the perimeter, like, that's actively putting him in tough situations, which he doesn't deserve to be in, frankly. Yeah. Like, that's what annoys me about it. So, I don't know why Billy Donovan is... Well, I kind of do know why. Like, the Bulls, they're a top-heavy team. Like, they got a 9-man rotation at this point, and 4 of those players are worthy of minutes. So, obviously, you've got Vooch and Thad as your starters, and then Lowry and Daniel Tice coming off the bench. So, that's 4 of your 9 guys are... traditionally sized bigs, let's say.
Right.
So that's kind of why they're pigeonholing Lowry into that small forward position. The Bulls just don't have a lot of wings. But at the same time, like, it's just not going to work. And, like, for 43 minutes last night, Billy Donovan didn't go to the Lowry Markkanen small forward thing. Like, he did against the Raptors, and it kind of made sense against the Raptors because of the Raptors play big. Like, you got OG at that small forward.
Right.
He's basically a power forward. So, it can work then. But against the smaller Hawks team that were running pretty much 3-guard lineups, like, having Lowry out there chasing Kevin Huerter or Tony Snell or some other guard or wing out there, like, it's just asking for trouble. So, I feel bad for Lowry in that situation, which...
Yeah,
you know, maybe I shouldn't, but it's rough. But to that point as well, like, why are you doing that? And why are you only playing Daniel Tice 11 minutes in a game? Like, okay, in a game where you need defense. Like,
thank you. That's where I was about to go next when we're talking about this big man rotation. It's like, Bulls fans and my guy Dave last night was like, you got to have Kobe out there because you got to get buckets. Like, he's the only other dude outside of Zach and Vooch who scored. And I was just like, what are you watching? Because yes, your team needs points to win games. They also need stops. Like, that to me is why the Bulls lost that game. It's like, they had a few bad possessions down the stretch when Zach was getting just absolutely attacked by Atlanta's defense and nobody else could do a damn thing, but they couldn't get a stop to save their lives on the other end. And Daniel Tice plays 12 minutes. You got Kobe closing instead of Sato. It's not like Sato's some all-defensive team guy, but his defense is sure as shit better than Kobe's. Like, I was just baffled by who was on the floor late in that game when you could see what was going wrong and that Donovan didn't appear to be making the logical, at least attempted, solutions to fixing what was noticeably wrong.
Yeah, it was very weird. And look, there was a point where the Bulls were up. I think they were about 101 points. The Hawks were 94, 96 off the top of my head, something like that. And Donovan had those lineups out there where they were basically all offense lineups. He had Kobe out there. He had Lowry out there. He had Vooch out there. He had a Zach out there. And maybe one other defensive player, let's say. Maybe it was Patrick Williams or whoever it was, Troy Brown Jr. But mostly those lineups were not going to stop anyone. And promptly when he went to those lineups, which happened to coincide with those three big lineups, like, the Hawks were always going to rattle off points. And they went on an 8-0 run, and that the game was pretty much done then. Like, the Bulls were failing to score. Like, that trapping Hawks defense that they were running, plus, you know, the Bulls' inability to get stops, like, all of a sudden the lead got out to, like, 101 to 107 or whatever it was, and then there was no coming back from that point. So, yeah, it was just a weird situation. And, like, to that point, like, you needed defense. So why is Daniel Tice barely playing? Why is Troy Brown Jr. only playing 15 minutes a game where you're getting torched by Trae Young? Like,
right.
Yeah, Kobe theoretically is another scorer out there, but if he's giving up as many points as he's sort of netting you, why aren't you, like, throw Troy Brown Jr. on Trae Young? We just saw him last week do some good stuff against Kyrie Irving.
Right.
A very similar player to Trae. Like, why is this dude only playing 15 minutes?
I didn't get that either, man. I know that Troy Brown Jr. is not, you know, the offensive threat that Kobe is. But, you know, talking about this team's plans and whether or not Kobe's even here long term, like, I feel like they got this kid Troy Brown Jr. in the trade on purpose. You know, this wasn't a clerical book cleaning kind of trade that the old regime used to do. They saw that this kid was talented and brought him here to play. Like, when we first heard that trade, I was like, Mo Wagner, like, what? That doesn't make any sense. We already got a crowded front court. Then they traded him off. I was like, oh, okay, that makes sense. So that was mostly just to get Troy Brown Jr. So play him. He's young and, like, potential through the roof on the defensive end, and more than potential, like, you know, capability, competency on the defensive end. I was excited to watch him try and guard Trae Young last night, and I thought we were going to see more of it. Especially when you just have Trae Young racking up points, and Donovan didn't say to Troy Brown Jr., go out there and stop him. Because I thought that was interesting. I'm not sure if you picked up on that. Some recent interview from Troy Brown Jr., who was talking about, you know, a conversation I had with Coach Billy, and I said to him, how do I get minutes on this team? And Donovan said, play defense. I need you to play defense.
Yeah.
Well, then go send him out there to play defense. Like, what? what are we doing?
Yeah, I don't get it. Like, I don't get closing that game to the Hawks. Like, they're not a good defensive team, but, like, closing a game with a Chicago lineup that was essentially all offense as well. Like, the Hawks are a really good offensive team. The Bulls are not so much a great defensive team, but you're sort of hampering yourself by throwing out an all offensive lineup, particularly ones where Lowry, you know, gets minute at small forward. So, yeah, anyways, I just wanted to get on that and, you know, whine about that because haven't had a chance on the podcast, at least for the last couple of weeks, to speak about it. I've obviously been venting my frustrations about it on Twitter if people have seen it on there, but I don't get it. And, you know, this is maybe a flaw of Billy Donovan going forward that we have to sort of track now. Again, like, the roster isn't perfect. It's nowhere clear, nowhere near complete. There's obviously things that need to change in the offseason, and you obviously can't make your team perfect at the trade deadline. But at the same time, there's just some weird things that are happening. And, you know, shout out to Cody Westerlund in the press game or the post game presser. He asked Donovan about those three big lineups, and the lineup where he had the three bigs out there and Patrick Williams at shooting guard with Kobe out there. Like,
yeah.
Donovan's response was basically that he just wanted to sort of beat up the Hawks with size. But, like, again, the Hawks are just a small, fast team, and you're already getting killed by Trae Young. Why are you actively trying to make yourself bigger and slower?
Right. I mean, we saw that already when it was what was it? Oh, it was the Suns game, right? When they played P-Dub at the two, and they were like, go guard Devin Booker. Yeah, we saw how that went. Not great.
Like, exactly.
And, you know, I'm trying to cut Billy Donovan a little bit of slack because I think you mentioned it earlier too. Dude's got a lot on his plate right now. First year in a new job, first year with a new organization, and spent the first half of the season trying to just evaluate and feel out all of these pieces that they inherited along with, you know, his bosses, AK and Eversley. And now he has several new pieces and some of the old pieces, and he's just, you know, he's trying to put puzzle pieces together, man. And I'm sure that it is a much harder job than those of us who are fans, bloggers, podcasters, you know, people on Bulls Twitter who watch the team every night. I'm sure it's a million times harder than we think it is. But I am with you in that recently, as we have gotten a larger sample size of the new guys playing with the old guys, where the rotation should be and the adjustments that he should make in game that he doesn't seem to be making.
Yeah, look, I make a fantastic, you know, couch coach, let's say. I'm really good at calling out plays, calling out rotations from my couch. So right, yeah. I definitely take your point on that. But at the same time, like, some of this stuff is like, come on, man. Like, isn't this obvious? Like, what are you doing? What are right. you doing? But anyways, moving away from that Hawks game, because, look, to be honest with you, I could whine about it for a long, long time. And in the interest of keeping things moving as well as not keeping you here too long, I wanted to talk to you about the remaining 20 or so games left in this season. Like, the schedule, it's not too bad from here on out. Like, it's there's games that the Bulls should find themselves in. There's games that the Bulls should really be winning. I thought the Hawks one last night was a really good opportunity. But nonetheless, like, the next few games that they got coming up, like, they're on the road at Minnesota, like, winnable game. Mm-hmm. Then you're on the road against Memphis. Now, Memphis is a good team, but they're just a touch above 500. Like,
right,
that should
like
be a
like Atlanta.
Game.
And so, you know, exactly. If you can play evenly with Utah and Phoenix on the yes. road, like, yeah. And like, yes, we didn't win either of those games, but we played the two best teams in the league evenly and gave them both a good fight. So if you yeah. can do that, you can beat Atlanta. You can beat Memphis.
100%. And then after the Memphis game, you're back home and then you play Orlando. Wendell comes back. Like, that'll be a fun game. Then you've got Memphis again. Then you've got Cleveland on the road to the Celtics, then the Cavs. Like, the next 7 to 8 games, there's some winnable games. Like, they've got the Hornets as well. Now, the Hornets are an above 500 team, but they're without LaMelo. They're without Gordon Hayward. Like, if the Bulls are serious about doing something this season, yes, their roster isn't perfect. Yes, they haven't had much time to sort of integrate everyone. But at the same time, like, if they're serious about doing something, like, this next block of games, next 5 to 10 games, is really going to tell us who this team can be, which is why maybe that's why I'm being very or looking at this Hawks game the way I am and being frustrated with it, because, like, this was a game where I thought this was a good test. Like, beating the Pacers or beating the Raptors when they're missing quality players, you know, so be it. You need those Ws, but you move on quickly. Right. Whereas this Hawks game and what's going to be coming up against, you know, the Celtics or the Heat or the Knicks, like, comparable teams, those teams that are sort of just above you, like, that's important. And they're the real reflection pieces. So, I don't know, how do you think the next sort of 5 to 10 games are going to transpire? And are we going to get these Jekyll and Hyde type performances from the Bulls?
I mean, I think so. I think there's still a gelling process that needs to be taking place here with some of these new arrivals and Billy figuring out his rotation. Although, to me, at this point, I think that the rotation should be pretty clear in that you know who your starting five is. Lowry and Kobe get minutes off the bench. Tice gets minutes off the bench, and then maybe if you want to go stretch it to 9 or like 8.5 on certain nights, depending on certain matchups and looks, Troy Brown Jr. gets minutes as well. And that should be it. Like, I don't know if you agree, but like, that's how I see it. There mm-hmm. it is. There's your rotation. And of course, slight alterations based on matchups on any given night, but it seems like that's pretty simple. And then you're right about the winnable games on deck. The other thing that the Bulls have working in their favor is that the team that they just beat, you know, earlier in the week, the Raptors seem to be going nowhere fast. There's a 2.5 game gap that the Bulls have there. Obviously, that was a big win, creating some separation with them and the Raptors. But, I mean, do I see the Bulls climbing somewhere to a point where they're not in the mini play-in part of the, you know, the playoffs overture, if you will? No. Like, do I think that they're going to win enough of these winnable games to secure the 6th seed instead of being somewhere 7 through 10? I really, really don't. And I'm not necessarily thinking that that's a failure. I thought that this season was mostly just going to be about evaluation. And if somehow, for whatever reasons, things came together more quickly than we thought and we made the playoffs this year, cool. But, you know, and maybe it was just low expectations based on recent history. I was not anticipating for the Bulls to be a 500 team this year. Or very close to it. I thought a little bit better than last year because improvement takes time. But hey, they swung for the fences. They got an all-star. We'll see what they can do. But I'm not expecting some great run here towards the higher seeds in the East.
Yeah, neither. And look, to be fair, like, even I think the Celtics are in 7 right now, but the Celtics have a 4-game lead on the Bulls. So making up 4 games in a 20-game batch, like, it's possible, but it's unlikely. Like, you need the Celtics to fall off and obviously the Bulls to start winning consistently. Well, you know, that's not something the Bulls do, unfortunately. Right. But
like, and the Knicks are in there, and you know Tibbs is trying to win every single night.
Exactly. And like the Pacers, they've won a couple games here and there. Like the Pacers have a 2-game lead on the Bulls at this point. But coming back to the schedule, like the Bulls play the Nets twice from here on out. They play the Bucks twice. But they have the Nets and the Bucks, like their last two games are the Nets and the Bucks, and who knows if those teams are even fully healthy at that point. So, but look, they've got the Nets twice, they've got the Bucks twice, and then they've got the Sixers once. Beyond that, like every other team they play, games that they should be in, like the best team they actually play is probably the Heat or the Hawks. So like they have a chance here to, they're not going to get up to six, let's say, but they have a realistic chance to at least get to eighth or ninth, depending how things go. I think the Knicks have one of the toughest schedules remaining in the season, but I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how it all plays itself out. They're learning and trying to win on the fly here, but I guess that's, like I said before, that's why that Hawks loss annoyed me so much, was because it felt like we were, I mean, Donovan has said this before, like self-inflicted wounds. Mm-hmm. And, you know, mentioning how the Bulls play at times, but it kind of feels with some of the rotations, some of the decisions, the self-inflicted wounds extending beyond the players on the court, let's say. But I don't know how you feel about that. But there's a chance here for the Bulls to do something decent. I mean, they're not going to, you know, jump up to six, but there's a chance for him to do some noise in the plane. But sometimes, like this Hawks game, it does make me question it at times.
Yeah, I question it too. I think that it would be very valuable for this team to actually make the playoffs and not just, you know, the one game or the two games, because they, you know, are at 9 or 10. If they end up in the 7 through 10 play-in and can actually win and punch their ticket to a real playoff series, and, you know, if it's them as 7 versus 2 or 8 versus 1, and they get worked in the first round by Brooklyn or Philly or whoever it might end up being, like, okay, this organization hasn't had a playoff trip in 4 years now. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, I don't know about you. I don't even count the last one, because that Three Alphas year was the dumbest freaking experiment on the face of the planet, and it drove me crazy. Oh, if only Rondo's thumb didn't go bad, we were gonna make a title run. God, Bulls fans, just sometimes.
Why did you
even
just sound like C. Red Fred just then?
It's not my C. Red Fred impression. It's just my,
it sounded like him.
It's just my unintelligent Bulls fan impression.
Well, it's maybe it's one and the same, I guess. Shout out to C. Red Fred. How are you, sir, if you're listening?
Oh, man. C. Red Fred's my guy. I love him. But I love that we you know, I always appreciate having, you know, a partner in crime to just rein him in. Anytime I see you taking him to task on Twitter, I'm like, yes, it's awesome. It's awesome to have someone on my team.
Well, literally just before we started recording this, I think we were just shitting on each other about Pink Floyd, random aside to the Bulls, but we seemingly always find something to argue about. But it's funny you mentioned that Three Alphas era, like just on a tangent, like I started this podcast during the Three Alphas era. So all I've known really is bad basketball as a Bulls podcaster. So like maybe that's like a subconscious thing about it as well. Like sure, like the Bulls aren't going to do anything of note this season. They're not going to go on some magical run here and, you know, sneak into the Eastern Conference Finals or something like that. But like, can we just get back to some semblance of winning? Understand there's all these caveats, the fact that, you know, the team isn't complete. You know, you've made all these trades. It's a weird year with COVID and all that sort of stuff. I get it, but like, we should probably be beating teams like the Hawks or at least getting into the play-in and doing some sort of damage. But
right. I'm with you because we'll like see. that's the natural progression of getting back to respectability and then eventually competitiveness and, you know, maybe lofty dreams one day, even like deep playoff runs and competing for championships, because you are literally starting from, I mean, to say starting from zero would be putting it graciously. You're basically starting from a negative number after how bad last season went. So instead of getting blown out by 30 or 40 every night, we've lost a lot of close games, some to mediocre teams where we probably should have won, and we've lost a lot of close games against the really good elite teams of the league where you think, damn, man, like that would have been the signature win of the season. That would have been the signature win. But in those games last year, we were losing by 40. And so it's frustrating, and I understand the Bulls fans want this progress to happen faster, but, I mean, those two games against Phoenix and Utah, like, that in itself is leaps and bounds from how bad this team was last year. And we just added another all-star to pair with Zach. Like, it's not going to happen overnight, and it's something I always try and tell Bulls fans who are the most impatient fans on the planet. But I get it. We've been waiting a long time, and like you, like me, Jordan and I started our podcast together, same season as you, and we've been talking about the Bulls 5 days a week through 4 years, nearly 4 years of just unwatchable basketball. So I get it, man.
Yeah, for sure. You're completely across it. And I guess what, again, just this has been a good therapy session for me, but like thinking about it as well, like, and this season and what we've been talking about and the fact that guys like Lowry and Kobe have gone to the bench, Wendell's gone, Hutchinson's gone, Gafford's gone, there's probably other pieces that I'm forgetting off the top, Chris Dunn obviously is gone, like the previous regime, the previous 3 to 4 years just felt so unnecessary and it's just gone, I guess. So it's like, all right, the stain and stench of that nonsense and the pain that we had to go through felt kind of unnecessary, but we are here. We're here where we are now. So can we start rolling as quickly as we can to this hopefully better days? And I guess that's what the Vucevic trade represented. And you're completely right. Like, we have to wait some time. And we've talked about the fact that this team isn't anywhere near complete, but at the same time, like, let's move on quickly to the new era. Can we get some good things happening? Because we all deserve it. But
so, you know, if they squeeze into a playoff spot, hey, that is definitely marked improvement, and that is definitely progress. And the other thing that I think Bulls fans always need to remind themselves of is, hey, we've got a new front office, and this new front office actually does things, whether it be on deadline day or in the offseason. I know Bulls fans were kind of disappointed that they didn't make any splash moves or signings in their first offseason at the helm. It's like, okay, well, NBA teams are dealing with COVID. They've got to evaluate what they have before they make any rash decisions. And now AK said in his interview at the end of trade deadline day, after making several trades, I'm not finished. And he knows that this team still needs a competent point guard. He knows that this team needs more help and muscle and capability on the defensive end. So let's see what happens this summer, because I'm guessing that the roster we see next season will be even more different and even more talented than the one we just upgraded to a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I definitely think that's the case. And I definitely don't think Lowry Markkanen's going to be part of it. And we'll see about COVID.
I think I'm with you, man. I still got my Lowry jersey sitting in my closet, and I'm like, man, if I can't wear that anymore, like, sometimes I'll wear, you know, old jerseys of players gone by, but man, I'm still fighting with it, but I've mentally accepted it, and now I'm just working on the emotionally accepting it part.
Yeah, fair enough. Like, I catch myself thinking, like, how do people even like Lowry or Kobe White? But then I start thinking to myself, well, you are the Wendell stan. Just shut up. So, you don't get to talk on this issue.
There are plenty of people who wonder why you love him so much. So,
exactly.
You know, everybody sees things differently. But, like, people that I've talked to this season, they're like, so are you, like, still on Lowry? I'm like, nah, man. Like, the dude showed me some stuff, and I was excited to see what else he was going to show me. And then he showed me nothing else. So, like, there it is.
Yeah. Yeah, I think part of it as well is, like, I got burnt so bad from Lowry in that February 19 period where I went on Twitter and made some bold proclamations about how Lowry was going to be better than Jason Tatum and all this sort of stuff. And maybe now, because I look so foolish about it, maybe I come down harshly on someone like Lowry, but yeah, it is frustrating, but anyways, it is what it is. I've kept you long enough, mate. We could, like I said before, we could bang on about the disappointment of those Garpax era picks for a long, long time.
But let's not, right?
But let's not, exactly. Bulls HQ listeners, and I'm sure Locked On Bulls listeners have heard enough of that anyway. But I just want to thank you for coming on, mate. I'm glad we had the opportunity to finally do this thing. It's a lot of fun catching up. And before I let you go, though, I'd be more than happy for you to plug what you're doing. Obviously, you're doing a bit of stuff. So tell the listeners, in the remote chance that they don't know where to find you, where to catch you, all that sort of stuff, tell them when they can do so.
Yeah, so me and John and Big Dave, my guys, we're still doing our thing this season. We're on Hot Mic, which is a really awesome app that's free to download. So we're there starting with the fourth quarter every night, and then into like usually about a half hour post game show. Bulls Outcast, you can find us on Hot Mic. And then, yeah, Monday through Friday, 5 days a week, still cranking away with Locked On Bulls and my guy Jordan Malley. Always enjoy the interactivity with our listeners there. And the new fun thing that's right around the corner for us is we're one of the first shows across the whole Locked On network that's going to be jumping into the very fun pool of YouTube and video content. So that's probably coming up sometime in the next couple of weeks. We're going to be doing live episodes via YouTube, restream, and having a lot of video content added to our podcast stuff on YouTube. So we already have our channel up. It's bare right now because we haven't started cranking out videos yet. We still have to go through the onboarding process from the network, but
yeah.
Go subscribe to Locked On Bulls on YouTube because we're going to start doing video content really soon.
That's awesome. I'll definitely be tuning into that. It's funny. Years ago, I created a Bulls HQ YouTube in the thought of, you know, getting this thing onto the video platform. But as I sort of alluded to before, where I've been really bad at scheduling and lazy in terms of trying to organize guests, I've also been bad and lazy trying to get Bulls HQ to jump on YouTube. But I will definitely be tuning in with when Locked On Bulls goes up there. And, you know, quick shout out to your co-hosts, Big Dave and John Sabine as well. Like, I just want to say, and they already know this, but like, it actually hurts me when they say the things that they say about Wendell. it also hurts me as well when I come back to them with the Stark Gafford stuff. So I definitely want to get John and Big Dave on here. Maybe we can do a Bulls Outcast type thing.
Hey, that would be great.
Bulls HQ.
I know that they love to give Wendell a hard time. I'm genuinely happy for Wendell. It seems like he's getting good minutes and playing well with Orlando. I was not as out on him as they were, and I think it was more so John, like, you know, was out on Wendell from day one. He came in and was like, this guy does nothing for me. The thing he always said, and like, he didn't rag on him and said he's crap. The thing that John's catchphrase about Wendell has always just been, he's fine, which is not an insult, but it's certainly not a compliment.
Yeah.
So you guys, you should bring on John and Dave and you guys can all hash out your Wendell stuff. I'm staying out of that.
No, fair enough. They'll definitely come on soon, but I get a lot of people coming at me about Wendell. And it doesn't generally bother me because they're just random Twitter people who, you know, whoever they are, I don't really care about them. But when Dave or John say something, it's like, you know, I like you guys. What are you doing? What are you doing? But anyways, we'll get the
differences of opinion, man. I mean, you and I have disagreed a few times, and you know,
yeah,
it's sometimes it's just about a player or, you know, some kind of basketball world of strategy, analytics, whatever. But I think for the most part, you and I agree on a lot of stuff. And then also, just we both live in reality, man. John and Dave are both kind of dreamers, and clearly our pal Fred is a dreamer.
Yeah,
it's
just,
you know, I always appreciate interacting and getting your takes, man, because you, I'm always like, oh, Mark, oh, another sane person on Twitter. How nice. There are so few of us.
Yeah. Maybe there's more out there, but we won't get into Jimmy Butler because maybe that's where we diverge, I suppose. That's the main thing that I can think about where we diverge anyway. But
probably. I know that you miss him very, very much.
I still miss Jimmy. But anyways, look, like I said, mate, I've kept you long enough. Thank you for coming on. And obviously, thank you for telling people where they can follow you. If they're not doing that, Bulls HQ listeners, go follow Matt, go follow Locked On Bulls and Bulls Outcast. So whilst you're doing that, jump on mine too. Follow me on Twitter if you're not following me there, at MK Hoops. Follow the podcast there too, at Bulls HQ Pod. If you want to be part of the Bulls HQ Discord, shoot me a DM on Twitter and I'll drop you an invite into that. If you don't know what Discord is, essentially it's a large chatting platform where 24/7 we're talking Bulls. So if you want to be part of it, shoot me a DM. But let's get those self-serving plugs out of the way. We are done here on this Bulls episode of Bulls HQ. But before I do go, just a quick programming note. I probably will be off at least 1 week, maybe two, depends. And the reason for that is that I'm actually getting my tonsils ripped out of my head in a few hours' time. So I have no idea how painful that is going to be or if I'll be able to speak. And given podcasting is an audio-only platform, it's kind of not ideal. So I'm going to be taking it day by day. So as soon as I'm good to go, Bulls HQ will be back, but probably be off at least a week. But in the interim, though, if you like what you're hearing, help out your favorite Australian Bulls podcaster by heading over to iTunes and giving the show a 5-star review, and even better, helping me out by telling your mates about Bulls HQ and getting them to tune in. That would be a massive help. But as usual, appreciate everyone tuning in. A special shout out to Marcin, Doug, and Andrew for your kind words and reviews that you've sent through this week. That stuff really does mean a lot for, you know, creators like myself. So appreciate you guys. Appreciate everyone tuning into Bulls HQ. We're just about done for today. Again, thank you for everyone tuning in. Bulls HQ will be back as soon as I can talk. But look forward to chatting to you then, Bulls fans.